I'm certainly a proponent for more distributed generation, particularly in BIPOC communities, and an opportunity for our communities to have that resiliency.
Welcome to Smart Energy Voices, an SED podcast featuring conversations with leaders of the energy transition, hosted by Smart Energy Decisions founder, John Faiella. In each episode of Smart Energy Voices, John digs deep with industry movers and shakers to reveal insights you can learn from in their stories, personalities, and visions for the future. All right, let's dive in.
Welcome back to Smart Energy Voices. I'm John Faiella. We'd be really pleased if you'd take 2 minutes to leave us a review on iTunes or your preferred podcast player. Your reviews really count, and it'll help us spread the word on Smart Energy Voices. Today, we're continuing our series on inspiring diversity in energy with a panel from our recent Renewable Energy Forum, where our own Deborah Channel sat down with Ajulo Otho, founder and CEO of Enerwell Solutions, and Dana Claire Redden, founder of Solar Stewards, who have both created companies in the solar space. They'll be discussing challenges of entrepreneurship and what they think's needed to bring more diversity to the solar industry. Let's jump right in.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back. I'm really excited to present this next session. It is Inspiring Diversity in Energy. And this is a series that we've done several times over our last events over the past couple of years. And it's become more front of mind than ever. Everybody's got ESG reports, and the S, the social part, is really being focused on. Companies are including it front and center in their policies. Investors are looking to see what companies are doing before they open the banks. So we really wanted to dig in again. And we're going to take a little different tact on this one. We are talking to two entrepreneurs in the energy field, specifically in solar. So I want to get started by introducing first Ajulo Otho, who is founder and CEO of Enerwell Solutions, LLC, and Dana Claire Redden, founder of Solar Stewards. And they've both got really interesting paths into the industry and to get to where they are today. So I want to start. Actually, Ajulo, I'll start with you.
Sure.
And just give us a little description of your background and how you came to be in the energy industry.
Thanks so much. Thanks, Deborah. And thanks to Smart Energy Decisions for inviting us to talk to you all today. I'm excited about this conversation. So a little bit about me. My father's from South Sudan. My mother's from here in North Carolina, where I'm based. And I thought I would be working in the field of international development when I finished graduate school, and working in South Sudan for that matter, but actually ended up working here domestically in the United States on rural development issues. And in some ways that was not surprising for me, but it was also a real growth opportunity to be able to see the connections and the ways in which people can live materially in the developed world, much like folks live in the developing world, and vice versa. So my work was across the 13 states of the Southeast on rural development issues and working in the Mississippi Delta and along the Gulf Coast in particular was really an interesting part of my professional development. And it kind of led me to where I am today because one of my last jobs was as deputy director with Oxfam America. And we were responding to Hurricane Katrina in the Gulf Coast. It was the first time that this large international development agency had ever responded to a relief effort domestically. And it was because of the sheer scale of it, but also because of the gaps in the public sector's response. So what I learned as a part of that process was that poor people in particular are very vulnerable to environmental hazards. And environmental hazards there will continue to be more of as a result of climate change. And I also learned that many of the same folks who were vulnerable to those hazards were also heavily reliant on the industries that in part created some of that hazard. and in the Gulf Coast, specifically the oil and gas industry and the petrochemical industry. And so we were, part of our response was not just in providing relief, but in also working with local communities to think about how do we rebuild better. It's a similar sort of conversation. I think we may have even used the slogan, Build Back Better. We were looking at all sorts of industries, and that's how I was first introduced to the renewable sector and solar energy in particular. And that was my last job. Since then, I've actually been in more as an entrepreneur and contract, including while I was regulatory counsel with Strata Solar.
So it's an interesting path into renewables.
Yeah.
Okay. And Dana, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Thank you, Deborah. I'd love to. And I always love hearing Ajulo's path because there's so many similarities. I think when you get to experience environmental degradation from an environmental justice standpoint, it really affects your psyche. So I grew up in Western Pennsylvania, so a steel town surrounded by coal towns. And to bring the family aspect in, I had one grandfather who made shoes for coal miners. He was a cobbler, an Italian immigrant, and another grandfather, African-American, who came up from Alabama to work in the steel industry. So interesting how that came together, literally, I suppose. And just seeing the remnants and toxic legacies of the coal industry really affected me. I could tell some childhood stories, but acid mine drainage, slag piles, those types of very real environmental issues were definitely a part of my entire reality growing up. So that really affected me. I loved Captain Planet when I was little. And so I wasn't really exposed to renewables until I moved to California. And that's where, at the time, the California Solar Initiative was in full swing. Amazing program, very successful, gave a newbie like myself a chance to really get into the industry at a very ground level. So I was meeting regular people in their homes. They were excited about solar. And that's where I learned the very basics of photovoltaics. I definitely have a background in the built environment, doing interior design and interior architecture LEED certification. So this all really came together when I saw this beautiful industry, and I wasn't very satisfied with some of the sustainability practices in my existing industry. And I just made a full-blown pivot and haven't looked back. So California Solar Initiative, you know, it's like circa 2006. In 2009, I had the opportunity to move to Atlanta, Georgia, where I sit now, to do LEED consulting and sustainability consulting for an engineering company. That's where I discovered a whole new market for renewables, particularly distributed generation, which I'm passionate about. And so when we saw that interesting dynamic in 2012 with the dumping of solar panels and for entrepreneurship and renewables in a market that could really use a consumer advocate. So just helping people make that solar decision, primarily the MUSH market and community organizations like churches, schools. We couldn't really make the numbers work on a lot of those projects. And that's what really brought about the innovations within Solar Stewards, which leverages the private sector's aggressive goals to climate change and helps to apply those resources and investment to BIPOC communities and communities of color, those on the front lines of climate change that haven't had the opportunity to participate in this clean energy revolution. And I love how Ajulo said it, you know, the gaps in the private sector and policy really helped us to innovate in that way and begin to help meet those CSR, ESG goals from that lens.
Again, another fascinating path. And we're going to get back to some of the policy in a little bit, but I want to give Ajulo a chance to tell us about the founding of her company, InnerWealth Solutions, and how that came about.
Sure. So InnerWealth started probably in around 2017, although we didn't actually become formal until about 2019, not very long ago. And it was started, one, based on this experience that I had about the issues of poverty, increasing vulnerability, and also related to the fact that there was a huge amount of investment going into rural communities, especially here in North Carolina, for solar energy development, for installations. They're all practically utility scale installations. North Carolina was second in terms of installed capacity in the country. I think we're third now, but that's behind states like California, where you've got a very different distributional impact of renewable energy. And so because of the background that I had, I knew that the investments that were going into rural places here in this state could be doing more for the communities that they were going to. And so that's how I envisioned InterWealth, as using investments in clean energy to actually achieve rural development goals. So our pilot initiative is in northeastern North Carolina with a rural electric cooperative.
And I'm with you for now. What's been the biggest challenge in terms of starting this company and the way that you went about it? And I'm thinking on several levels. I mean, starting any company, being an entrepreneur, has its challenges. Being a woman still has its challenges in terms of getting started, and being a woman of color on top of that. So what were some of the biggest challenges in getting started?
Right. You know, I think part of it is, for my experience, was actually not that difficult starting. And that's primarily, I explain that by my faith in large measure. But it was Roanoke giving me a chance. They were a special kind of leadership and a special kind of entity. And so they gave me the opportunity to actually put in place this vision around a broader strategy related to clean energy. But I imagine that were it not for Roanoke, it would have been much more difficult for me to win that first job.
Shout out to the progressive policies in Roanoke. That's terrific.
That's right. That's right.
And Dana, what about you? What have been some of the biggest challenges in starting your business?
That's a question I reflect on a lot, thinking about the next phases in the future. Certainly capital. I think that's a familiar answer, right, for any entrepreneur. But at the same time, I think to the point of why this topic of diversity has been front of mind, there have been very stark discrimination and barriers, whether that's in a board meeting. And, you know, there's a lot of anecdotes about women in board meetings voicing some expertise and no one really acknowledges it. And then a male counterpart 10 minutes later will say the same thing. And it's like, oh, that's a great idea. So, you know, those types of experiences, microaggressions, full out discrimination, you know, I'm not going to pretend like that hasn't been a very impactful part of my journey, which is why I feel it's so important to do the work that we're doing in making sure to tell that story and to make it better for those coming along the path. So I think there's always a challenge to leverage that energy towards something good, because it certainly exists. So with that said, I mean, it has given me the opportunity to really zero in on those allies, like Ajula is saying, those folks that really see the value. And I think that is that ongoing conversation and opportunity to recognize the value that diverse teams bring.
And so we've talked about the challenges. What about some of the surprises? What surprised you in this journey to forming this company?
It's nice to have some validation, because when you have an innovation and I don't know why it catches me by surprise per se, but it is certainly a delight to hear, I'm so glad you see the value here. So getting that feedback has been, at least for the last, let's say, 9 months, quite refreshing. And yeah, you know, coming from all the stakeholders in our program, from those in the community, from our corporate buyers, from solar developers, the market just responding, wow, this is exactly what we need right now. And for this particular segment of the market, it's especially powerful. I just had a meeting last night where that happened. So maybe that's affecting my answer, but it is delightful. What can I say? Surprising, maybe that's not the word, but certainly timely.
Mm-hmm. Timely, encouraging, validating.
Yes.
Okay, so we got you at a good spot.
That's right. The best way of feeding.
Well, I hope there's many more of those. I think there
Thank
will
you.
Be. And Ajula, what about you? What's been surprising?
Oh, yeah, I would probably echo everything Dana has said about sort of the market starting to get this greater awareness around issues of equity. And there's been a lot of struggle and sacrifice to get to this point. And I am sort of surprised by the amount of openness, because we kind of have tread this ground of struggle before. But I also see this as sort of a narrow window of opportunity and not necessarily a seismic shift in direction. And thankfully, though, there are lots of companies stepping in and professionals stepping in to kind of help possibly move it into something that's more sustainable. With the Biden administration's, for instance, focus on Justice 40, the 40% setup, we're getting to the policy part, but 40% focus on frontline communities, to more of this discussion about social and equity, all of those things I think are encouraging for me.
And let's stay with policy now. So again, we know a lot of what the Biden administration is trying to push through is certainly going to encourage more of this development. Ajula, what else do you see happening on the policy and regulatory front?
Well, I also see that there is more conversation about how to do this in such a way that this transition, which we really, I mean, I think it's clear that it will happen. However, there is a much more nuanced conversation around our transition to clean energy that is, I think, really important to have, because there is a way in which we can reduce carbon reduction that does nothing but reinforce the same sorts of inequities and that leaves behind coal communities and leaves behind communities who are heavily reliant on fossil fuel industries in general. But there's much more discussion about how to make this transition equitable. So the focus of the 40% from the Biden administration, which I believe is a focus on all agencies and any allocations of the federal budget above and beyond sort of the within the clean energy pockets of money at DOE and USDA and Treasury. So it's a much broader focus, and that's exciting for me. Obviously, I'm also excited about the Climate Accelerator, which is the federal Green Bank, for instance. It's the source of funding for green banks in states and municipalities across the country, but also, hopefully, it will also support the existing community-based financial institutions, the credit unions and the CDFIs and the minority-serving depository institutions, so that they can do more clean energy lending and develop more products that can meet the needs of this thriving marketplace.
And Dana, do you have anything to add to that?
Yes, I think it's so important with the focus on smart grids, microgrids, redundancy, resiliency, security, and the point that we are going to experience more of these climate weather events. I'm certainly a proponent for more distributed generation, particularly in BIPOC communities and the opportunity for our communities to have that resiliency when the temperature is going up in, you know, not only triple digits, but like 115 degrees. To think about folks sitting at home who don't have AC, what are they going to do? So these are the conversations that we have. We've actually seen this happen. And so, you know, we need that. And then, of course, that triggers blackouts, brownouts, those types of cascading events. So it's of critical importance for this nation to make it a priority to have a greater resiliency in communities. That can be accomplished in several ways, but distributed generation is just one of the, I think, easiest, if I may say that. Not that in solar is particularly easy, I suppose, but we're on a great track for that. And so I'd love to see more support. I was so encouraged and excited, talk about surprised, in September of last year when FERC came around with 2222. Absolutely the signal that I personally was longing to see and that I think the market needed to say the DERs really have a place within a big strategic energy plan. So my motivation is to make sure that those assets are located in communities of color, so we do gain the benefits of that. And then, of course, you know, how storage pairs in with that. I think there could be a lot of policy for that to help that financing, like Joel was saying, those vehicles. To the private sector, when we say policy, obviously we're talking about some of these governmental innovations, motivations, but I think the private sector can continue to lead on how they're approaching climate change. And I'm on this thing now where I want to get the message out that the private sector should really look at doing an environmental justice, energy justice, climate justice, if you will. I know they're different terms and sometimes conflated different things and very connected. But I believe every private sector actor who's got a sustainability goal should also have an environmental justice goal within that. Mm-hmm. So that's the type of signal that I want to see next to achieve that goal of that greater resiliency in our communities.
Our buyers watching today, that's really, I don't want to say a hot topic, but an important topic.
So. Hot, literally. Like
yeah,
that.
Literally. Try to stay away from that, but you can't help it sometimes. Okay. So I want to highlight some case studies and some success stories. And Azula, let's go back to you. Let's give another chance for you to give a shout out for Roanoke and what's
Yay.
Going on there.
Always happy to do that. Always happy to do that. So Roanoke Electric Cooperative is a distribution electric cooperative, and there is a larger generation and transmission provider, which is the North Carolina Electric Membership Corporation. They are also leading the way here in the state and helping to build out a portfolio of solar and storage projects, recognizing the benefits of really the demand reduction value primarily, but there are also microgrids that are being developed here in our state. There are waste to energy projects that the membership corporation is starting to build. And so there is a lot of activity and thinking happening in the state, specifically the projects that I developed with Roanoke. The innovation there is that they, in addition to sort of providing the electrons and the immediate demand value, part of the operational savings from that is invested in an energy efficiency and health and safety upgrades at the household level. So even though the direct production from the facility is directly benefiting the utility only, and that is a critique that I have raised about these systems, is that very few households actually directly benefit from the generation. In this case, they are benefiting from the generation because a portion of that savings is going directly into households to make them more energy efficient, to even do things like fix broken floorboards and leaky roofs, mold remediation, those kinds of things that have to happen before you put in a smart thermostat or a efficient heat pump. And it's a revolving fund because it's a tariff on bill mechanism. So the cooperative puts up a upfront investment because that is a major barrier for low to moderate income people to actually invest in energy efficiency. And then on the bill, a portion of that investment is paid back over a period of time to the utility. And so we're reducing folks' energy burden. Probably have heard that term before, but some people in these communities, and unfortunately within Roanoke's territory, are paying more than 30% of their income on their electricity.
So definitely a solution that needs to be enacted there. That sounds great. Dana, what about in your area? What's one of your success stories?
Like I said, in my area, yeah, literally, I'm sitting in Atlanta, Georgia, and I'm smiling because just to reflect on, you know, this past decade when I moved from San Diego to Atlanta, and I hadn't a real knowledge of policy at the time. So it was a real come to Jesus moment to learn that you couldn't do a third party transaction at the time in Georgia. So now it's quite exciting to be able to do a pilot here in Fulton County, the home of Atlanta, the city too busy to hate. And, you know, I did have to really think, was back in the day, certainly I've crossed this bridge, but, I want to do solar, you know, people, why would you move to Georgia? You need to go to, and sometimes it was New Jersey. It's just so inspiring to be in such a city that has a legacy for civil rights. So that has been an opportunity to really leverage our program and the fact that, you know, we use rec revenue, social recs, as we have termed them, to pay for that inclusion, whether it be, you know, DEI, which Atlanta is pretty much known for diversity and contracting, but more so for that workforce training component where, you know, we really want to make sure that this is an inclusive field. We want to bring the whole community along and show them that they could do a cool career. Have I seen a solar panel in Western Pennsylvania in the 80s? I might have made a beeline. So giving communities the opportunity to see this career and solution in their neighborhoods. So leveraging that, bringing a diverse team together has certainly been a joy in Atlanta. I worked on the original Atlanta, what's called Solar Atlanta at the time, 5, 6, 7 years ago now. So this is the opportunity to kind of come back, do more, and do it with that inclusive lens in my backyard.
So it's interesting. You're talking about what is need. You know, my next question, you've already started the answer. What is needed to bring more diversity to the solar field? So clearly it's education and it's visibility. I mean, you just said it, show somebody a solar panel, they're going to get excited about the possibilities. So that's really interesting. Azulda, what do you think is also needed to bring diversity into renewables, into solar specifically?
It is visibility of the panels themselves, but more importantly, I think it's visibility of the people. So having folks like us and the other members of BOSS, which we'll get a chance to talk to in a little bit, as well as ABE, which is the American Association of Blacks in Energy, helps with sort of being able to identify oneself in that position or with that particular industry. And hopefully we can help to engage more young people in general who are really committed to trying to save this planet and help them with. And the things that we're doing now around solar and battery are different than they were even 15 years ago with solar. And so we can, of course, imagine that there'll be other technologies that come to bear. So the more that we're able to sort of make this space open and welcoming to all sorts of talent, I think the better off we will all be in terms of saving our planet.
Thank you for bringing up BOSS. I know that BOSS is a passion project for both of you. So I want to, let's just top line. Dana, why don't you start? Tell us what exactly BOSS is. What does it stand for? And what are you trying to accomplish?
Thank you. I'd love to. BOSS is Black Owners of Solar Services. It was just came about as the opportunity to come together and create a community. A lot of times, you know, people would say, wow, Dana, you know, you're the only one out here doing this. And it's like, actually, there's a lot of us. So in talking to Ajulo and several other leaders and colleagues in the space, I thought it was really a good time for us last year to do this in a formal way, to come together in a formal way, because we are bringing immense value to this industry. We're answering the problem of the fact that even though it's in its latest iteration, you know, I want to give a credit to those who were pioneering this in the 70s and even prior to that, but in its latest iteration, specifically the solar industry, unfortunately, has followed those inequitable lines and paths. So BOSS brings that opportunity to help that and to help those that say, oh, you know, we need a more diverse industry here to really understand what's needed to meet that goal.
Many thanks to Ajulo and Dana for the great work they are doing and for joining us on Smart Energy Voices and at our event as featured speakers. Special thanks to Deborah Channel for another great interview. I'd also like to thank you, our listeners, for listening to the podcast and being a part of the Smart Energy Decisions community. If you enjoyed the episode, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and tell your colleagues and peers about it. To learn more about how you can become a part of the next Smart Energy Decisions event, click on the link in the show notes for more details. We're honored to have the opportunity to share conversations with leaders of the energy transition in this podcast, on our website, and at our events, all in the interest of helping you make smart energy decisions.
Thanks for listening to Smart Energy Voices, an SED podcast. Digest the insights from today's episode and take action on the ideas that have inspired you. Join us every Friday for conversations with smart energy leaders. We also invite you to check out another SED podcast, Beyond the Meter. Each episode of Beyond the Meter features innovative energy projects and initiatives by large electric power users. To keep up to date with trends and happenings in the energy transition, visit smartenergydecisions.com to register for our daily newsletter and become part of the Smart Energy Decisions community.